The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Yamaha portable keyboard, only $79. Add a month of lessons for only $99. Plus the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing and gift cards, the perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center. Lessons available at select locations only.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And season two of But I'm Chris Jericho premieres tomorrow, December 7th, worldwide at butimchrisjericho.com. Butimchrisjericho.com. You can watch season one up there now and watch all the new episodes on season two. It's CBC's new series produced up in Canada, but going worldwide starting tomorrow, December 7th. You can binge watch the entire season. One of my co-stars is completely insane and so, so funny. The hilarious Kevin McDonald from the Kids in the Hall, one of the greatest comedy troupes of all time, is here. He joins his compadre, his associate, Scott Thompson, who was in season one. If you want to see that, go to acting class. It's amazing, season one of But I'm Chris Jericho. And Kevin is here about ready to play McGloin in season two, the Uber producer who's going to help Chris get his pilot made, but it's at a little bit of a price. So, so funny. Kevin's got some great stories about the troupe's early days performing in Canada, what inspired some of those popular sketches in Kids in the Hall history, characters like the Chicken Lady.
What are you?
God, you're not too bright. I'm a chicken lady.
A chicken lady.
Yeah, and I love life. Do you love life?
Oh, yeah.
I thought you might, because I put that in my personal ad. Chicken lady loves life.
And the king of empty promises.
You got the money you owe me?
Slipped my mind.
Do you have any idea what I do to people that don't pay me what they owe me?
I'm just sick about this. I'll tell you what. Tomorrow, I'll have your money, plus an autographed picture of Gavin McLeod.
You promise?
Will do.
He's also talking about their Saturday Night Live audition, meeting producer Lorne Michaels, and how that all led to the kids getting their own TV sketch show, and of course their underrated movie Brain Candy, which admittedly I did not understand when I first saw it. Kevin's got a hilarious story about auditioning for writer-director Nora Ephron, who did Sleepless in Seattle and When Harry Met Sally. Get ready to laugh a lot with the amazingly quirky and funny Kevin McDonald, who is one of my co-stars in season two of But I'm Chris Jericho, available tomorrow, December 7th at butimchrisjericho.com, the brand new series in CBC. And for all of you around the world, you're going to check it out. And I think you're going to like it. So we're going to have Kevin McDonald coming up. And also coming up, we're going to tell you how you can meet WWE Hall of Famer Diamond Dallas Page in person. He's going to be signing autographs, taking pictures, and talking to fans this weekend at the Steel City Con in Monroe, Pennsylvania. He'll be there December 8th through December 10th, and you can get your tickets at DiamondDallasPage.com. You can also meet him in person next October on the Chris Jericho Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. Dallas is bringing his live DDP yoga workshop to the cruise, so you can work out with Dallas as well. Get this 411 on what you need to do to really master DDP yoga. And remember, all of this, all of the DDP yoga sessions, all of the concerts, all the comedy shows, the live podcast, the entire Ring of Honor, Sea of Honor tournament is all free. It's all inclusive with your reservation, your cabin reservation, which you can do at chrisjerichocruise.com. And one of those things you can do is join DDP Yoga, do DDP Yoga. You know what it's done for me in my career. It's done the same thing for thousands of other people around the world. And now Dallas has announced a brand new program in the DDPY lineup. It's DDPY Rebuild, and it's a variation of the DDPY program geared toward those 55 years and older, all of those people with physical limitations, Diamond Dallas Page can help you. Dallas is 61 himself. He looks 51. He acts like he's 41. And he wanted to help people with his DDPY yoga, DDP yoga, especially those who are a little older or just have limited mobility. He wants everyone to thrive and live the best life possible. And that's what DDPY Rebuild workouts do. They take you from the bed to the chair and eventually to standing upright without the support of a chair. DDPY Rebuild is the perfect holiday gift for your parents, grandparents, and even your great-grandparents. Get them the gift that will help them rebuild their lives, keep them mobile and active, and living life to the fullest. Go to ddpyoga.com/rebuild to learn more and to pre-order the DDPY Rebuild program. And on top of that, Dallas has extended his biggest Black Friday sale ever. This is a Black Friday month. You can still get 30% off all DVDs, app memberships, and all apparel. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. No better time to get on board the DDPY program. Change your life. Own your life. Get in the best physical and mental condition you've ever been in, ever in your entire physical, mental career, mental life, everything in between. Start today. Do it now. ddpyoga.com/Jericho. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Go do it now, man.
Okay, to the best of your ability, could you give me a description of myself running naked through the woods?
I suppose around 6:13 a.m. you'd be spotted taking off your conservative blue suit. Mm-hmm. To reveal a 5'11", approximately 80-kilo frame. Mm-hmm. From there, you'd be seen scurrying through the underbrush, yelping. Mm-hmm. Maybe wrestling deer to the ground.
Deer.
And feel free and alive for perhaps the first time in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe fall asleep in a culvert.
Culvert? Well, it takes all kinds.
Sure does.
So Kevin McDonald shows up wearing sunglasses.
And what does he say? He says they're prescription.
Yeah.
Oh, it sounds like I'm lying, but I'm not lying, I swear to God. Though I need a new prescription because they're becoming normal sunglasses and things are fuzzy again.
But so do you have to wear them inside at all times? Or like?
No, I'm just wearing them now because I didn't bring my rear. I'll take them off.
But you don't have to.
But then it's your job, Chris Jericho, to remind me to bring them because I have to drive with them. I'm taking my jacket off too. My car keys are in my jacket, so I have to remember to bring them.
And you showed up with different colored hair.
Different colored hair. This is the right fake color. That was the wrong fake color.
This is the most random of things that we did a project last week.
Well, your show. It's a great show.
But I'm Chris Jericho. And we had a fun, like, what a blast it was.
Mm-hmm. It was a fun scene.
Wasn't it? Yeah.
Very lucky to be in a fun scene.
And then I found out that you live in Winnipeg, which is the most random of things.
Yes, yes. I fell in love with a woman.
Oh.
A whole woman. A whole woman this time. yeah, and then she lived in Winnipeg. So I moved from Los Angeles to Winnipeg. I never had a pool in a house in Los Angeles. So I have a pool at a house in Winnipeg.
Go figure, right?
Yeah,
as you do. Because there's not a lot of people that move to Winnipeg.
Yeah,
most people move away.
Yes, you moved away.
I did.
Yes,
and most people did. But there's another friend of mine who's a singer in a pretty popular heavy metal band who also lives in Winnipeg, who moved here once again for a woman.
Oh wow!
How many freaking women is there in Winnipeg that are attracting all of you?
And he moved from Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
it's the pull of those Winnipeg women.
We're moving there. We're going back, and I'm there all the time. Who cares, Kevin? Shut up. It's like I'm insulting Winnipeg. I love Winnipeg.
Yeah, but you live here now. Absolutely.
I live
here,
yeah.
So how did you get involved with But I'm Chris Jericho? Do you know the guys behind it?
Yes, I know Gary.
Gary.
I never say his last name. Do you pronounce it right out? Right out?
Right out, yeah.
Yeah.
Or is it Radio?
Exactly. So I just say Gary.
Hey.
How do you don't have to say a guy's last name anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Hey.
Yeah, because he one of the owners of Comedy Bar.
Mm-hmm.
And Comedy Bar has become the big comedy place. In Toronto since I moved from there to go to Los Angeles, which my plan was only to stay there for 16 years until I fell in love with someone from Winnipeg.
And boy, it worked out.
It worked out.
Yeah, the plan
it worked
out
exactly in the 16th year. The Yuck Yucks isn't that was the comedy club there. That's not like so big as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Second City isn't as big as it used to be. The place where the Kitson Hall played, the Rivoli, was big for a bit. Then that died. Mm-hmm. I think it was killed by Gary Riddio. In the Comedy Bar. And so anyway, I go there to perform. I'm doing good hand gestures, but no one can see because it's an audio podcast.
It's very animated.
You can see it.
Yeah.
I'm doing I perform and I teach comedy workshops there.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So he he knows me that way.
So, because the idea was, we had Scott Thompson in the first season.
Yes.
And so we were talking about this character of his original name was Jimmy McGloin, but there's a lot of like copyrights out there, so we had to change to Randy McGloin for whatever reason.
That's so weird. There's a famous Jimmy McGloin out there
somewhere. But I was like, we should try and get another one of the kids, like make this a theme.
Oh yeah,
where every season we have somebody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Get Mark or Dave or Bruce.
And that's what I thought. And then they said like McDonald's coming, and I wasn't sure which one you were.
But we all have all our names start with MC. Yeah,
that's that really
yeah,
Mark. What?
Mark McKinney.
Yeah.
Bruce McCullough.
Right.
Just that. Kim
McDonald. Yeah, that's it.
I lied about all of us.
And then Thompson and a Foley.
Mick Foley.
Mick Foley?
Yes, Mick Foley. I guess if I became a rapper, I'd have to call myself MC Donald. I guess.
Now, you know what's something funny, though, is there's a famous wrestler in the WWE whose name is Mick Foley. So when you said,
of course, yes.
When you said Mick Foley, I was like, I was thinking a different route than you were.
I read his book. It's good.
It's very good.
Some comic who opened for me in, not Seattle, but a place close to Seattle. They have a bridge. he was obsessed with Mick Foley, and he gave me the book, and it's a good book.
He did a good job. It was like it was number one on the New York Times bestseller charts.
Wow.
Because he wrote it himself. But that would be the Mick Foley that I was thinking.
Yeah, yeah, the M-I-C-K space Foley.
Yeah, you're doing the Mick Foley. Because Kids in the Hall was formed and based in Toronto.
Yes.
Right. Are you from Toronto?
That was way too loud.
And you're very proud. Yes!
Yes! Sorry. Yes. I grew up in a suburb of Mississauga.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved to Toronto where I met Dave Foley. Now, they always say, what's with my hand today? I don't know what it is.
It's okay. At least you took your shades off.
Yes, at least I'll forget them. I put them
perfect. Don't worry. I won't let you forget your shades or your jacket.
I should put them on the floor by the door. Well, I may step on it, but that way I would remember it.
Just put them by the exit just so you know while you're walking out.
And people could use it as a rug.
Like Kevin McDonald. We'll just leave it there and it'll become part of the national monument.
Yes.
Kevin McDonald's
sunglasses floor mat.
And jacket. Yeah, sunglasses floor. And what is this, a kind of a satiny type thing?
I don't know.
That's very nice, though. Rayon?
What's the story? I think my Winnipeg woman wife got it for me for Christmas.
That's Triple W we're going to call her from
Winnipeg,
now on.
Yeah,
Winnipeg woman wife. Yes, just make sure she is a woman.
Kids,
yes.
Kids, yeah. They always say that Dave and I are the founding members, but that's kind of a cheat. We're the founding members of the group called the Kids in the Hall. There were two older guys, the two Micks, Bruce McCullough and Mark McKinney, but they formed a group before us. But when we met, we just picked our name. Our name was better. They were called The Audience, and Dave always thought that was pretentious because we're like The Audience. We're like part of you, man. We're like we're together. We're in this together. So
where did you get The Kids in the Hall from? What is that?
The Kids in the Hall is a old showbiz story.
Really?
Yes. Sid Caesar, who had like the first super great sketch comedy show. Some people would say Milton Berle, but I would say no, it's not great.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Milton.
It was okay.
It was okay.
Milton, if you're listening,
yeah,
your show wasn't great.
It wasn't great. I'm okay? So sorry.
There you go. And Sid, if you are listening, which he may
is
be
it,
dead.
Is Sid? I forget if Sid. I know Milton's dead.
Well, if he's listening from the afterlife, he's listening from beyond the grave.
Yes.
We love your show.
I'm sorry. But you were great and you pioneered the
yeah.
But Sid Caesar. It was great, and he had really great writers in his writing room. But there were young guys, and they did it in 30 Rock, same as Saturday Night Live. And they had guys pacing. I'm doing a thing with my fingers, walking down the hall, literally pacing the hall to sell jokes and sketch ideas. And if they sold enough, they were hired. And they were called the Kids in the Hall. And two of the Kids in the Hall were Mel Brooks and Woody Allen.
Really?
Yes.
So they would be hanging out.
Just selling jokes.
And
sketch ideas.
Interesting.
Yeah. And Sid Caesar, another Kid in the Hall, actually the first Kid in the Hall, I read the book and that's how I heard the term. Neil Simon, you know, the guy who wrote The Odd Couple and everything.
Yeah.
People under 38 don't know who Neil Simon is anymore.
Or Sid Caesar, for that matter.
Or Sid Caesar, yeah.
So we might have lost
maybe Woody there. Allen's starting
that's
to...
That's getting in there. Yeah, Mel Brooks.
And Mel Brooks, maybe they don't because of the producers. But since Neil Simon... Sid Caesar told his writers one day they had this idea where him and his guys would him and his cast would act out a cuckoo clock, like act out the parts of a Swiss cuckoo clock, and the writers just stared at him and didn't get it. So he went in the hall, and Neil Simon was there with his brother Danny Simon, and he said, "You two, Kids in the Hall, could you write me a sketch about a Swiss cuckoo clock?" "Yes, sir." And they wrote the sketch, and Sid Caesar loved it, and it's one of the most famous sketches of all time.
Wow. Yeah, yeah, you just never know, right?
Yeah, yeah, you just never know. Go to YouTube it. And then that's how they were hired. And I guess they were the first Kids in the Hall, Neil Simon and his brother Danny. They were like in their early 20s.
I never knew that. Yeah. It's like I was a groundling and always wondered what the hell groundlings meant.
Yeah, where did
I come
from? And
what it meant was that in the day, and I'm probably getting this wrong, and I'll get blasted by hardcore groundlings fans, and I apologize, something to do with Shakespeare, the audience, like the low-life audience, they were called groundlings at the time. Oh, thanks, dude. Appreciate that. Duff just came. Duff, this is Kevin.
Hi. Kevin, how are you?
From Kids in the Hall. This is Duff from
Kevin. Very nice to meet you.
Duff's good.
Why, thank you.
Duff just came and delivered my microphone case because I was just talking with him. And we're enjoying the almonds as well.
Oh, good.
Yeah, yeah.
Carry on, gentlemen.
Okay, thank
Carry
you, man. On. Go enjoy your workout. Okay.
Okay, have a good workout.
Okay, thank you.
You look in good shape.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, dude. There you go. What other podcast?
How's my glutes look?
Your glutes?
Your glutes? Let's see.
Glutes look good. Like, yeah. Duff, you don't really have much of an ass.
I'm working on it.
You working? There you go. See you, man.
Looks pretty good.
The only podcast in the world with Chris Jericho, Kevin McDonald, and Duff McKagan. Another Mick. He's another Mick.
Yeah, another Mick. That's
Mick
right.
Mick McKagan, exactly. Right. It's like a secret tribe.
We got to get Mick Foley here. You're Mick Foley.
Which one?
You're Mick Foley.
Both of them. Yours too.
Yeah, both.
Yes. That would be a good mix.
David Mick Foley.
So the Groundlings apparently was Shakespeare, like I think some of like the poorer people that would come to a play that was in the, you know, in the middle of the street or whatever would be called Groundlings.
Oh,
something
neat.
Along those lines.
That's neat. And you were a Groundling?
I was.
For how long? That's pretty neat.
I was there for a year. And
were you already famous?
Yes. And this is how I got. I snuck in the back door in that they were really associated with Mad TV, if you remember that show.
Yes, yes, yes.
And one of the guys was working on Michael Hitchcock. A great.
Oh, of course, yes. I've met him once or twice.
Yes, great improviser. Yes. Great, very funny guy.
Christopher Guest movies, too.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Right. So he invited me to go to one of the shows. And the director is Mindy Sterling.
Yes. Met her once or twice. I think I improvised
with her. You've met a lot of people once or twice.
Only once or twice. This is the last time you and I meet. Because it's been once or twice.
Yes, Chris Jericho. I met him once or twice. And Duff McKagan. I met him once
or
twice, but once. It's on the one side. So he, so she was the director.
Wow.
And she was like, you should do this because she was a wrestling fan. And wrestling is a lot of improvising.
Absolutely.
So I came in and did the Thursday show was called Cooking with Gas, which was guests, alumni, and Sunday night, which is like the Groundlings is like a big secret society.
It is, yeah, yeah.
You know, where you come in at the bottom and then like you have
some Masons.
It is. And you have to wait for someone to leave for you to get your chance. So I worked every Thursday with them for about a year. And it was interesting because do you do improv or have you done improv?
Yes, yes, that's how we started. Yes,
so there you go. So as you know, like
we should improvise together.
We should. I think we kind of are. She said that you know all of the top level stuff, but you don't know the basics. So then I went to the Groundlings class and learned the basics of improv.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah. So it was quite a.
You did in reverse.
I did. But it was cool though because I learned a lot about the biggest thing I learned was committing. Right? Because, improv, if you don't commit, it's not going to work.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And I see that in the thing I teach in workshops is how to write sketches through improv. So I have to see them do improv. And I see people get stuck as soon as they don't commit all the way.
Right. Because it's like, okay, Kevin and Chris, it's like we're all in the troupe. But Kevin and Chris, can you go on stage? Okay. Give them an activity. You're on a first date and a job. A taxidermist. Okay, you're on your first date at the taxidermist. Like, what?
Yeah.
If you don't commit, you got nothing.
Yeah, exactly. If you're giggling at it. Yeah. And I guess it's the same thing. You can't block or deny. Someone says, hey, you have a snake on your shoulders. You can't say, no, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because that kills everything right away. It just kills the energy and deflates.
What's the classic yes and, right?
It's classic yes and.
So Kids in the Hall started as an improv group?
Yes and. Dave and I started, we started Second City Workshops. That was our Groundlings in Toronto, Second City Workshops. And then we started working with a guy named Luciano Casimiri, who's brilliant. And we were the original Kids in the Hall. He sort of suffered from stage fright, and
doesn't work.
Big writer now,
comedian. Yeah,
he was sort of. I guess the legend is that he's the best one, and he quit because of stage fright. that's how we started through improv, because we did a thing called theater sports, where it's like improv games.
Right, sure.
And that's how we started. And so we met the other guys, and then we learned. They had already learned how to write. because they were 2 or 3 years older than us. I met them once or twice, 2 or 3 years older than us, and they. And so they had in Calgary, they were the biggest thing in Calgary. They had a sketch show every Saturday night at midnight. But it was.
Who's this, Scott?
Scott was a struggling gay actor in Toronto. It was Mark McKinney and Bruce McCullough, okay. And a bunch of other guys.
So they were Calgary guys.
They were Calgary guys. Called the audience.
It's interesting that when you think about, like, you know, we just had Duff here from Guns N' Roses, how there were two bands in Hollywood that then combined forces because they became Guns N' Roses. Kind of sounds right. Like the same thing with Kids in the Hall.
Absolutely.
What was your idea? You wanted to do like a comedy troupe?
Yeah.
Were you like a Monty Python fan? Or?
Well, absolutely. We were Monty Python. That was our like blueprint, Monty Python, but we also liked SCTV and the Saturday Night Live thing, of course.
Right.
And the audience, they moved to Toronto. There were four of them at that point. All brilliant, but people quit because they got like good writing jobs, and they rented a theater in Toronto, and it was another midnight show. It didn't take off like it did in Calgary, because mm-hmm. Calgary there's less. No offense, Calgary. I love you, Calgary. Yeah. I love you, Calgary. I met you once or twice.
Been to Calgary once or twice.
And they did the Saturday Night Live thing. They got Dave and Luch and I to be their featured players. Mm. But it like we well, I have to say the pompous thing. We were too good. And it's not like all of a sudden they say, okay, you're with us. It's just we gradually became equals. People kept quitting until there were four of us. And then Scott Thompson just forced his way into the troupe. He just kept coming and jumping on stage, and we had no choice.
After a while, I was like, just give him a gig.
Yes. You met Scott. You can see him doing that.
Yeah, well, I was saying, the funny thing I was talking about was Scott did the first season, and he showed up and brandoed it, had no idea what the script was. But he wrote all of these notes on the side of the page, like Unabomber, like joke ideas, and that was kind of he was brilliant. It was so funny, but completely different than what was written. You, on the other hand,
I did exactly not one word of ad lib.
Exactly, everything was exactly how it was written.
Exactly,
but that's, I mean, I guess the different styles of comedy, right?
Yeah, I could do that, except I feel insecure that I'm hurting the show. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not brave enough for that. I could do both things, but I always just want to, like, I guess play it safe. Mm-hmm. I'm a child of an alcoholic, and I guess
So when you're first starting with a 5-man comedy team and you guys are doing the comedy clubs, I mean, you now you're getting paid and splitting it 5 ways. Not a lot of cash in the system there.
I know. It's funny, we all had part-time jobs except for Bruce McCullough, who did stand-up. So he could survive on his stand-up money. He was also the apartment he had, he'd get for free because he was he got a job as a superintendent, but he didn't know what to do. And he'd call our friend Brian, the guitarist, crying, go, I don't know how to fix the sink. You're going to come and fix the sink. But he got free for calling his friend Brian to live there.
Yeah, yeah. What was your job?
I would same with Dave. We were movie ushers. We ushered E.T. We ushered Tootsie. We ushered Monty Python, Meaning of Life. We had that day off Friday. So Dave Luch and I, Luch wasn't an usher. He worked at a dairy. And I remember we have, this story has no ending. This story has no story. We saw Meaning of Life. It was very exciting for us that we saw it and we loved it.
Best scene in that is Mr. Creosote.
Yes, it's funny. I just saw it last week. Yeah, the thing about that. Cause
Does it hold up?
I think okay. It holds up. It's like, it's not their tightest comedy. And there's stuff that I could see now could be rewritten. But it's the whole is better than the parts. Mm-hmm. I still love it. Of course, I want to love it. But I think as a movie, it works great. And there's some great scenes. But, the scene where the guy throws up and blows up, throw up.
Yeah.
I knew it was an hour and 15 minutes into the movie, or whatever it was, an hour and 25. Because as an usher, I had to go there all the time to hold the door open because the older people, there was always like 5 or 6 people who had to leave. So I knew, oh, it's throw up time. And I and all very rarely did no one.
And the scene is there's a super huge fat guy. Yes. I think it's Terry Jones. Terry Jones. Yes. And he's eating so much and he just keeps throwing up.
Yes.
And just huge, like, gouts of just like
on the other customers,
throwing up on everybody. And then Eric Idle's the waiter,
yeah,
who goes, would you like a mint?
Yeah, so it's the last straw.
It's wafer thin. I just remember Terry Jones like, off, I'm full. It's wafer thin. Then he eats the wafer thin mint
and blows up his barf.
It just explodes.
Yeah.
So let me let me hold on a second. You're actually the usher. Where like you're like, what are you wearing? Like a little like a pillbox hat and like opening.
No,
the door?
I it was a few years after pillbox hats. I sold cigarettes. No, but it was the day. It was still the day of the usher. Now there's really no ushers unless you go to Arclight in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And even we did way more than them. You had a flashlight.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In my day, you had a flashlight. If people were cold, you got them a blanket. And you have to say, excuse me, could you move down here? I have a couple here. And if you move down the one seat, they could sit together.
You're actually running the theater. Now it's just, it's like the Wild West.
Yeah, it's the Wild West. It's crazy.
You have to do it on your own now.
Yeah. There's wild people living in the movie theaters now.
You have to, can you move over? And the guy might say, like, no.
Yeah,
and
no.
Then, what are you going to do?
Yeah, get the usher? No, because there is no such thing.
There's no usher. So you had the power to do that.
Yeah. It was a great job. The once I was, it was Saturday afternoon, it was empty. And the Richard Pryor stand-up movie was on. Mm. And I remember I sat down, and then my manager came in looking for me. And I was sitting down watching Richard Pryor, and he just laughed. I was lucky because I was sort of a good usher, and he knew that I was like a comedian. And obviously,
yeah.
I would I've never sat down before, I swear to God. It's just the joke was so funny.
Who were some of your favorite comedians when you were growing up?
Well, in the 70s, there's so many. There's so many older ones. Let's stick with the 70s ones. Let's stick with the ones that were current when I was a kid.
Okay.
Because I have 2,056 idols.
Okay.
But, of course, Woody Allen was the big one.
Okay.
Yeah. Richard Pryor was the big one. Steve Martin was a big one. Gene Wilder was a big one.
Gene Wilder is super funny, man.
I know.
He doesn't get the credit, maybe, unless you're talking to people who really know movies.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
You know? But like, if you watch,
and everyone knows Willy Wonka, but no one knows Start the Revolution Without Me, which I just saw again last week. It's a great movie.
But another, like, you know, they're talking about like Blazing Saddles. Like, obviously, everybody's so funny, but he's the best. Like the Waco kid with the shaking hand.
That's one of the best sticks ever. It's pretty good, yeah, but I shoot with this hand.
Yeah, his hands all
We're doing funny
shoot
visual
with this
stuff.
Hand. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, that's Gene Wilder for sure. Albert Brooks was a big idol of mine. Andy Kaufman, I kind of like the anti-comics too, Andy Kaufman.
I could see that because like even the Kids in the Hall style and your style, it's very – like Kids in the Hall, if you read the bit on a script, it shouldn't be funny.
That's true.
But it's in the delivery.
Have you read them? That's
sort of true. But it's the delivery of it.
Sort of true,
is the genius, right?
Yeah, I think for the most part. Like Bruce and Dave could write good jokes, but overall I think you're kind of right. Especially with me. That's me to a T.
Completely, yeah.
Every time I want to like pitch scripts, can I read it to them? It's only funny the way I read it.
I remember the one, I don't think you're in this bit, but the guy's car won't start.
All right.
And he's like, try it now. Do it now. Right. Try it now. And then they open the hood and there's a baby in the carburetor.
Yeah, yeah.
He takes the baby out and it starts.
Exactly.
Like, not funny, but so funny.
Well, exactly. And our one of our producers, Cindy Park, because she was a woman and a mother, she's – I don't get – it's not funny. We're not doing it. But we forced to do it. I think I might be in the scene as the wife because I think I asked to look exactly like my mother. And my mother thought that was weird.
And that's another thing about kids too. Like what's like very Monty Python. Everyone's dressing in drag.
Yes.
Everybody, whoever needs to do it in whatever skit.
We did. We had no women. Well, we had women in the troupe when we were a stage troupe, and then they got. There were like two or three. One of them became Sandra Shamus. Well, she was always Sandra Shamus, but like a very famous sort of stand up sort of storyteller, but. Like she sells out of giant theaters still to this day. Anyway, they were so good, and women in comedy it was even rarer back then that they were like hired by Second City and stuff. So we were stuck with the five of us in all these scenes about women. So, but we didn't want to play women insultingly with high voices and funny breasts. So we had this. My girlfriend at the time had a red sweater, and we had the same audience come every week. And
hold on. Funny breasts.
Funny breasts.
Breasts are funny.
Funny breasts, like giant balloons.
Yeah, I got
gotcha.
You, yeah, yeah.
Like we sort of wanted to act like ourselves, slightly feminine. Mm-hmm. So I borrowed this red sweater from my girlfriend, and everyone in the audience knew that whatever Kid in the Hall was playing the red sweater was playing the woman.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then later we graduated and we got a purse, but that was weird. Should we get a purse? Is that horrible that we get a purse? And then in the TV show, we tried to talk Lorne Michaels into doing the – can we just do the red sweater? We don't want to play women. And Lorne Michaels looked at us. I'm going to do my Lorne Michaels impression. We asked, can we just play women wearing a red sweater? Can we not wear makeup? Lorne Michaels looked at us. Here's my impression. He said, no. My one word impression. That's Lorne running away.
Yeah. I did a MacGruber. They did a movie of it with Will Forte.
Oh, wow.
And we were in between takes, and I was talking about, like I just met Lauren for the first time, and I was like, dude, he sounds exactly like Dr. Evil.
Yeah.
And Will's giving me the cut it thing, right? And I'm like, what? He goes, he's pointing at my lav mic. And he says, if Lauren hears you say that, he'll flip out. He hates being told that he sounds like Dr. Evil.
Mike's doing a Lauren impression.
Yeah, he's doing a Lauren impression when he's playing Dr. Evil. But Lauren, I guess, says, I don't sound like that or whatever. That's the worst Lauren impression ever. But
the month before that movie was released, our movie came out, Brain Candy, and Mark McKinney, he plays the president of a pharmaceutical company, Don Werder, and he does a Lauren impression.
Oh, does he?
Yeah. He does a learn. Is there anything I can give you? Anything you want? Land in Montana, AA batteries, one of the Dixie Chicks.
That's totally it, man. That's totally it.
We love Lauren Michaels, though.
Great guy, Lauren. If you're listening, with Sid
Caesar. Yeah, I'd be nothing without you. I'd just be a guy in Winnipeg. I am just a guy in Winnipeg.
With a triple W.
Yes.
The Winnipeg woman wife.
Yeah.
So you guys are doing this the Toronto thing with the five of you guys. How do you finally end up getting in contact with Lauren Michaels? Because like you mentioned, when you said that he basically
he gave us everything,
the kids, right?
Yeah, we'd be nothing without him. Mm-hmm. We'd be I don't know, but some of us would be writers,
ushers.
I'd be a movie maybe manager at this point.
Candy guy.
At one point, I was asked to be a movie manager. And then that's when we were like a struggling stage troupe. And I thought, oh, take me away from the kids in the hall. And that was my big decision. I said, no, I will stay an usher. And it can be. So anyway, from 84 to 85, when we were actually kids, because I heard your question. I'm asking your question.
We're all over the place. We're having fun.
We're answering your question.
Yeah, we are, yes.
From 84 to 85 is when we did our stage show every Monday at a club called the Rivoli on Queen of Spadina in Toronto. And we pretended that we had a TV show in the sense that it was always new sketches, completely new sketches that we wrote
every week.
Every week.
Wow.
And then we slowly built an audience. And then by like a year later, by the summer of 85, we were selling out and we were sort of a local cult thing. We sort of still are just a local cult thing. And then this was 1985. And Lorne Michaels had quit Saturday Night Live 5 years previous.
That's right. That's when Dick Ebersol was like
exactly
the, right. Yeah, yeah.
Good for you. You're a comedy guy.
Oh my God, I'm a comedy guy.
You're a groundling.
Groundling. There you go.
And a historian too.
Yes.
And now Sid Caesar, you know. he had just announced that he was coming back to Saturday Night Live, and he was sending talent scouts to all the comedy cities in North America, which were New York, Boston, Chicago, L.A., San Francisco, and Toronto, because he had hired people from Second City.
How do you mean comedy cities?
Like this, where comedians start, where there's a scene.
Gotcha.
I would say there's a scene in those cities. Mm-hmm. And Toronto just barely had a scene, but he had hired Dan Aykroyd from there.
The Second City, right?
Yeah. And Gilda Radner.
Yeah.
Now the summer of 85 – we'd done it a year. We'd done every week completely new sketches. Lorne Michaels wasn't in our universe. We didn't even think about that. But Mark McKinney, one of the mix, said, we're building an audience. We have all these sketches. Why don't we rent a theater for a week and we'll call it the best of the kids in the hall? And that's what we did. We got a theater for free for handing out flyers for the theater. But we did with it. But we Scott Thompson and I once we were sick of handing out flyers, so we tied a giant elastic band around it and we brought it to Lake Ontario and we did a tribal burial ceremony and we threw it in the bottom of Lake Ontario. But don't tell anyone that. Oh, it's
biodegradable.
Yeah, it's biodegradable.
As long as they were paper flyers.
They were paper
flyers. If they were styrofoam flyers,
they were paper.
Then you guys are rat bastard ecological disasters.
We're good.
Okay,
they were
good,
paper
good, good.
And then we did the week show and it became I don't know if sensation is the word, but sort of a sensation in a small play. You know, like in Toronto, we were on Peter Zowski, like radio show. That was pretty exciting.
That was a big one.
Exciting. We were excited. We had much music. The Globe and Mail gave us an amazing review. And because of that review, the guy that was coming to look for talent, Yvonne Fasson, who later ran the CBC.
That's not a real name.
Yeah.
Yvonne Fasson.
Yvonne Fasson.
Wow, okay.
But if you read it, it sounds like Ivan Fekin. So you got to know how to pronounce it. Ivan Fekin. So Ivan Fekin, he read the review about us, and he came to our last show, Sunday show, and it was such a real theater the show had just started when he came in, and the real theater person was going, "You can't go in. It's the theater. It's already started."
Yeah. Was he like, was he an usher? Maybe, right?
A theater usher.
Oh, the irony.
They're worse. They don't have flashlights.
Yeah.
Ivan Feakin came in and saw us, and I guess he liked us. And the next day, I'll cut to the next day, I was calling my movie theater going, "I can't come to work today. We just signed with the biggest comedy agent in Canada, and we have a conference call with Lauren Michaels. Okay, someone else has to usher Tootsie." That was way past Tootsie. What was 85? Splash note. Out of Africa, probably.
Yeah, there you go. Right.
Out of Africa. So that's how we got connected, because this agent knew Lauren Michaels very well. She was Dave Thomas's wife, Pam Thomas, and we got connected. Lauren Michaels didn't know what to do with us at first. He didn't want to pay for five tickets for our audition Saturday Night Live, like five flights and five hotel rooms. So he sent Franken and Davis, who were idols of ours.
Yeah.
Now he's a senator, Al Franken.
Yeah. And Tom Davis passed away, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
You are a comedy historian.
I know those guys.
So exciting. Yes. I got to learn more about wrestling. When I was a kid, Mighty Igor was my favorite wrestler.
Wow.
Do you remember Mighty Igor?
No.
Yeah, it was way before wrestling was popular. Oh. And he fought the Sheik, not the Iron Sheik, but the guy called the Sheik.
Yeah, the crazy Sheik. Yeah,
yeah, the crazy Sheik.
They used to work – they were a Detroit-based company because the Sheik was really popular in Detroit. And then they would go to Toronto and work up there.
Because Detroit's so close to Toronto,
very close,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I didn't know Mighty Igor was a Toronto guy. I wasn't aware of that.
He probably was not a Canadian or something, but he was on the circuit.
But there was a big scene, though, in Toronto.
Yeah, Gene Tunney. And do you remember Gene Tunney?
Well, Gene Tunney, it might have been Gene or was it Jack Tunney?
There were a few Tunneys.
There's a bunch of Tunneys.
There were a few Tunneys. And the nephew of one of them is Eric Tunney, a brilliant stand-up comedian who later died.
Because the thing was that the Jack Tunney used to be the ipso facto commissioner of the WWE. Just all bullshit. But like whenever there was an issue, whenever there was a problem, we got to go to Commissioner Jack Tunney and get his decision.
Gene was his brother.
Okay.
And he wrestled longer.
There might have been a Frank Tunney as well.
There's a few Tunneys.
A lot of Tunneys.
Because Eric's dad actually was the least popular Tunney wrestler. He's the one that lost all the time.
Okay, right. Okay, gotcha. So Tunneys aside, you're talking about Franken and Davis came
to
write with you?
No, to audition us.
Audition you?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Because it was cheaper to fly them. And the club that we played, we did a solo show just for Franken and Davis. And Dave Thomas from SCTV, because his wife was our agent. And our agents were there, and it was so weird to do like the lights went down, but there's only like a few people there, and they're comedy legends.
Yeah.
And it was like a 2 hour, usually our shows were an hour and 20 minutes. We think that's a comedy time, right? Hour and 20. But it was like 2 hours because everybody wanted their piece in.
Get the shit in.
Yeah, which was horrible. And then I remember Al Franken, they took us to dinner afterwards, and Franken said, "You guys are good, but what are we going to do with five guys?" Mm-hmm. So they hired Mark and Bruce, who were the two older ones and the two best writers at that point. At that point, I was just learning. And Dave was really great. He could have been picked. Scott. And so I'm kidding, Scott. So they hired Mark and Bruce as writers for Saturday Night Live, but our agent kept bugging Lorne Michaels. So finally, after a year of the Anthony Michael Hall year.
Yeah,
they wrote that year.
That was his first year back, Lawrence, and it was a shitty year. I'm walking over here to close the door. I might have to put the microphone down.
Right, I'll fill with the
do some improv. Do 30 seconds. Give me 30 seconds, Kevin.
Give me a location.
You're at the Red River Exhibition.
Oh, I'm at the Red River. Hey, can I have some donuts, please? Give me a lot of donuts because I'm about to go on that ride that makes me sick. And if I have a lot of donuts, there's a chance I might be really, really sick. So can I have a lot of donuts? I need more donuts. More donuts! Quick. Okay.
End scene. Good.
Thank you.
Good stuff. Thank you. So they hired those guys as writers on that year.
Yes. Well, they wrote on that on the what's considered maybe the worst
year. They didn't
year.
Write very much good stuff then.
No.
You know
who
else?
No.
Robert Downey Jr. was on that year as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Robert Downey Jr., Randy Quaid.
They liked Randy. Randy Quaid was on Saturday Night Live.
I know he was. I know it's weird because he's a great movie actor. Now he's just crazy. I guess he was a great movie actor, but he was good on Saturday Night Live that year. And I remember Mark and Bruce liked to write for him because he committed.
So there you go. I don't remember anything about that season except for Anthony Michael Hall and Robert Downey. I think they played Simon and Garfunkel. That's yes. Yeah, remember that?
Yes, I do remember that.
And Randy Quaid, I think he's actually in Canada somewhere, like on the run from the law.
Well, yeah, he was. Is he still?
Maybe he'll be here too.
maybe he'll come in.
We got Duff from Guns N' Roses. We got Randy Quaid.
Randy Quaid.
The all-star edition of Talk
I loved
Jericho.
The last detail. He is a great actor.
So, but they didn't break you guys up, though. They just hired those writers.
Here's the thing about Kids in the Hall. The Mark and Bruce are heroes because usually what happens to a sketch troupe? Monty Python, even they were like formed by other people. They knew each other. But a real sketch troupe usually gets divided and conquered. They never make it all the way to the end mm-hmm. of their career like we're doing because we're still together. And every few years we do a tour or a TV show or something. But they usually get divided and conquered, meaning – two get hired as writers. One becomes a star on TV or something. And so we just thought that was going to happen, that we were divided and conquered. It was over. Mm-hmm. But Mark and Bruce, because in Saturday Night Live, you do 3 weeks and then you get a week off. Then you do 3 weeks and a week. On their weeks off, they didn't rest. They came to Toronto and we did our Rivoli show again. Mm. And it was during that year that we wrote some of the stuff that later became more famous on the TV show. Mm. Like it was actually like a great year. And because we stayed together – because we were still perceived as a troupe, the Kids in the Hall, Lorne Michaels finally came down. We rented another theater, did another best of in 86, and he came and saw us. And it's funny, it was a bad night. There weren't many people there, and we were off. And then I remember that's it. We went on a TV show. Then Lorne Michaels said, no, you really tell how funny a person is on a bad night. He always says smart stuff like that.
Yeah.
So he fired Mark and Bruce.
So wise. Yeah.
Yeah. He fired Mark and Bruce. As writers. And he signed us. It took a couple of years to find a network. I thought there was an armrest in my chair.
Now you're doing kind of a bit where like
I'm not drunk.
You're doing your McGloin bit where he just passes out with his eyes awake.
That's right. Yeah. Right on the show. You got to see it.
We haven't seen that yet. But
when it comes out,
it's very funny. Yes.
He's editing it right now. Yeah, right. In front of me. Yeah, he's editing. It's a little rude, but
I'm really not paying attention to what you're saying. I'm busy editing this next season.
You do two things. Yes, what I'm saying yes to whatever I was saying before I fell off the chair.
Was it CBC that?
It was HBO that originally did it.
Wow.
And then they started panicking because they didn't have that much money. It was like before Sopranos. They just had like boxing and and movies. And so then we thought, well, we're going to shoot in Toronto. Why not get CBC? So it became a partner thing.
Oh, gotcha. Now, you mentioned like SCTV, which is the seminal Canadian sketch show.
Yes.
And so classic. And like you mentioned, like what would happen is that somebody would get famous – and then move on, and they would have to get somebody else in there.
Exactly.
And that never – there was always like the lead guy, and you guys never had that with Kids in the Hall. It was all five of you were equal.
Yes! Right? You're so good. We always figured this – well, this is the way I look at it. If you look at Monty Python, even John Cleese was a bit of a star.
Yes.
In SCTV, first it was John Candy, then it was mm-hmm. Martin Short. Mm-hmm. Saturday Night Live, right away, was Chevy Chase, and later became Belushi. The Kids in the Hall, we always figured the writing was the star. Mm. And it was our job to present the ideas. Writing is the most important thing to us. We know in our hearts that anyone in SCTV can outperform us. Any one of them can outperform any one of us. Like that's what I think anyway. But writing wise, I would take us as writers. So that was our bread and butter. That's what we focused really on the troupe. And we were just good enough actors to get like the ideas across. The writing was the star.
So let's talk about that first season of Kids in the Hall and how that worked. But before we do, Kevin, let me explain how TrueCar works because it's easy. It's so easy. And the only thing you need if you're looking to buy a new or used vehicle is TrueCar, because with TrueCar, you can research the exact car you want right down to the color and all of the options. And then you can see the price that others in your neighborhood paid for the same car. So you know that you're getting a fair price as well. TrueCar gives you upfront pricing information so you can enjoy a better car buying experience. And when I say upfront pricing, I'm talking about real pricing on actual inventory that's in stock at the local TrueCar certified dealer. Now, remember, there's over 13,000 dealers in TrueCar certified dealer network, so there's definitely one near you. And TrueCar connects you with a local certified dealer of your choosing who will honor your guaranteed savings, which makes your car buying process quicker and easier. And TrueCar also shows all of the dealers available incentives before you arrive at the dealership. TrueCar users save on average over $3,000. $1,000 off MSRP, and over 3 million cars have been sold to the TrueCar users and the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. So you can get them new, you can get them used. TrueCar is also great if you're looking for a used car. Like I said, there's over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available at TrueCar Certified Dealers. So using TrueCar lets you see what other people paid for the car you want, so you can determine a fair price and feel confident when you buy your car. So when you're ready to buy a new or used vehicle and you're ready to save money, save peace of mind, save time, I know I used TrueCar in the past. You need to do it too. Visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. It's the way to go. Remember, some features not available in all states.
This holiday, switch to Cricket Wireless and get a free LG Fortune with no annual contract. Cricket Wireless, something to smile about.
Requires number ported and service activation, minimum $30 per month. First month service charge and in-store activation fee up to $25 due at sale. Tax and restrictions apply. One-time fees may apply. See store for details.
Hey, this is Chris Jericho inviting you to the first ever Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. Picture this: rock and roll, wrestling, comedy, live podcasting, all on the open ocean from October 27th to the 31st, 2018, from Miami to Nassau. I'm bringing Hall of Fame wrestlers, some of the greatest rock and roll bands on the planet, and putting the first wrestling ring on a cruise ship ever. Don't be a stupid idiot. Make the list. Check us out at ChrisJerichoCruise.com.
No, I know it's a cliche, but my favorite album of all time is still Sgt. Pepper.
Sgt. Pepper, what's that?
Well, it's only the Beatles' most famous album.
The Beatles? I'm sorry, who are they?
Well, the best group of the 60s.
Oh, the 60s. I didn't hear much music in the 60s.
What? What are you talking about?
Well, Dad always was a little crazy, but after the car accident, when he started taking the medication, things got worse. One night, he woke me up and knocked me out. Brought me down the basement, where I lived for the next decade. I heard no music. I had no friends. I just lived in the darkness. They shoved food under my door, so I had to eat pancakes and pizzas. It was a nightmare. But I survived.
That's horrible. I'm sorry.
Of course I heard of the Beatles, you retard.
So when you did that first season, were you guys just get in a room like similar to this and just start throwing ideas around? Because the thing, like I mentioned earlier, Kids in the Hall is very much a comedy in delivery. You know what I mean? Like
right.
But it's a weird style of humor. It's definitely your own brand.
Yeah. Yeah, we were lucky that we were well, this is what I think about us, that we're not the five funniest guys in the world, but we're the five funniest guys in the world that work together.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Monty Python's retired.
So did Lauren give you like a carte blanche, just do whatever you want?
He did. We were lucky that he, A, trusted us, and B, that he lived in New York and was working on Saturday Night Live, getting that back to being like a great thing again, which he did and has been for many years. Mm-hmm. So he trusted us, and he was far away. So every now and then he would give us advice, but he let us go because we're in the same baseball diamond of thoughts, the five of us,
mm-hmm.
And that's why it works, and that's why we don't have to be the five funniest guys in the world. We sort of were, because the other guys in the troupe, Gary, Frank, Luciano, they were brilliant. Gary Campbell is the one that should have become the major TV. He's a major writer now. He's a major success. But I thought he was like going to be the new Steve Martin. Frank was brilliant. Lucha, I've already said, was better than Dave and I. But when people quit and it became just the four of us, then Scott joined, it was the right chemistry. Like, you don't have to have an all-star team.
Right.
This is what I say. In 1985, if you want to like play the Russians in hockey, do you send an all-star team or do you send the Edmonton Oilers? You send the Edmonton – I hurt my hand. I'm sorry, you're a wrestler and you do things like that. I hurt my hand doing it. Anyway, you send the Edmonton Oilers.
Point, right.
Because yeah. They're a good team.
Because the team, yeah, the chemistry.
And that's what I think the Kids in the Hall are. We're the Edmonton Oilers. They had the right chemistry. They had great players who had the right chemistry.
Yeah, well, it's like that in a rock and roll band, too. You might not have the best guitar player or whatever, but right. It's the chemistry of the five guys or four guys. And if one guy leaves, it can throw the whole band out of whack.
And the Beatles really took off when Ringo, and Ringo's just a drummer, one of the best drummers ever. But it really took off because he added to the chemistry.
Sure, the chemistry.
Yeah, he added to the chemistry.
Yeah. Was Kids in the Hall a hit right off the bat?
We were never a hit.
Mm.
We did 5 seasons, and we never had good ratings. I guess the 5th season, we finally got decent ratings. HBO, they didn't care about ratings. I don't even know if they did ratings back then in HBO. We didn't really take off until the show was canceled. And it was canceled like in 95. And then from 96 to 2000, Comedy Central in the States played us all the time. And that's the people who grew up watching us. People didn't even know we were on HBO.
Hmm.
And later CBS. The last 2 seasons we were on CBS.
Really?
Yeah, HBO canceled us after the 3rd season. And Lorne Michaels, being Lorne Michaels, talk CBS. We were on at 3 in the morning in most places.
I remember I used to go to Red River Community College right down the road here.
It's a great college.
It's a great place. And I took it was called Creative Communications. And it was journalism, advertising, public relations, radio, all that stuff. And the one rule was that this is – dude, it was 1989, but it might as well have been in the 50s because there was no computers.
Right.
So you had to have a typewriter. And if you had one wrong letter, you couldn't use whiteout.
Oh, no.
You had to redo the whole thing. And I was always, typical college guys, Sunday night, shit's due Monday morning, and Kids in the Hall was on Sunday night.
Oh.
So I'd always watch the show while I'm typing out my thing. I don't know how many times you guys messed. It's like, this is so ridiculous.
How much money do we owe you?
Ka-ching. Oh, I got to do it again.
How much was your tuition? I'll leave a check.
But it was just like I would always screw up. Like it'd be right near the end and hit like an A instead of an E because I was too busy watching your guys' show. So there you go.
Well, yeah, that should be our slogan. We're so funny, we'll ruin your career. You'll fail college for that funny.
Essay, yeah. So when I remember the big thing too at the time was Brain Candy. You mentioned it earlier. That was a Kids in the Hall movie, but not a critical favorite, not a critic's favorite.
Yeah, it was mixed. Some critics liked it and some critics hated it. We're surprised. Like, I still think it's a good movie.
Yeah.
I watch. But now we keep waiting for it to become a cult favorite. I guess that's not going to happen. Mm. But I think the critical reception has turned around.
I think people have certain expectations.
Yeah.
Of which one? Because the idea of the movie was like there was, like you mentioned, some professor, and what happens? He has a TV. What is it?
He's a scientist, discovers invents a pill that's a cure for depression.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lorne Michaels type guy who is the president of the pharmaceutical company, they need a big hit. It's sort of like an analogy to a TV show.
Yeah.
Like Lorne Michaels, it needs a big hit. So they release the pill before the scientist is finished testing it. And it becomes really popular. The scientist originally thought it was going to be just prescribed by a psychiatrist. The psychiatrist, did I say the right thing? But it becomes so popular, it goes over the counter, and everyone in the city starts taking it. So everyone's like stupidly happy. And then because they didn't test it, there's side effects, and people get in what we call glaucoma. So they sort of just freeze, smiling, and that's and so then the scientist, like Frankenstein, has to work against his own monster, his own pill, and starts fighting against it, which I think is a great movie. And it's funny. People wanted – Lorne Michaels was surprised. He said, so is it going to be Chicken Lady or Head Crusher movie? And we said, no, we're not going to put our camera. We're writing a story. I think we were too ambitious. I think our first movie should have been a gag fest.
Mm-hmm.
Can I talk about the Beatles again?
Please.
The Beatles worked their way up to Rubber Soul and Revolver and Sgt. Pepper. They did She Loves You and I Want to Hold Your Hand and then A Hard Day's Night. We jumped into Revolver.
Right off the bat for your first record.
Yeah. We tried to be mature right away. And I think it's a pretty good movie, but I think it would have been even better for 2 things. If Dave Foley hadn't quit the troupe, he still had to do the movie, but he was mad at us. And he was on news radio, and he was right to be mad at us. We weren't quite ready to do the movie, but we did it. And so we miss his joke power, and we miss his ideas. We miss his writing.
So he wasn't writing with you guys.
He wasn't writing. He was at first, but very early on, he quit. The thing is, he quit the day after he signed the contract, so he had to be in it.
Mm.
Which, thank God he was in it, but we really missed his writing.
And why did he quit?
I
mean, you don't have to get into it, but it's a typical, like, you mentioned the Beatles. We mentioned the Beatles once or twice. Call back. And
call back.
So when you have like a troop of 5 guys, it's hard. It's like being in a band, because I know it's like a 5-way marriage, and you got certain guys that get along better than the others, and that sort of a thing.
Yeah, it's complicated. Well, Dave was in news radio, and that was doing well, and he was becoming a star. and he was flying in from Los Angeles to Toronto to write with us. And this is how the Kitson Hall works. It's Mark and Bruce on one side, and they were always they cared more about the mood and the theme and the spirit of the sketch and the comedy. Dave and I on the other side, comedy. It's got to be funny. Is it funny? And Scott, like a guy who votes Republican or Democrat depending on the candidate, would bounce back and forth. That's how it went.
Yeah.
So Dave and I were a team. We're the best friends of the troupe. I mean, like, there's no one closer in the troupe than Dave and I.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can sort of see that in our scenes together.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a falling out. I went 2 years of psychiatry later, so I knew I was jealous of Dave's success.
Mm.
But also, Dave, he had written a script for his movie, which he later shot, and it's a great movie, The Wrong Guy, and I'm lucky enough to be in it. And he didn't think our Brain Candy script was ready, so, and it wasn't at that point. He was right. So he wanted to do Wrong Guy. So he wanted to delay the movie. And then so him and I started arguing.
Mm.
And it was sort of my fault that he quit. Because we're the best. Because it wouldn't be the worst. It wouldn't be the guy that he had the most trouble with, the Kitson Hall, that would make him quit, because he's used to that. It would be the guy that was his best friend.
Right. I was going to say that, too. Like, when he got news radio, does that make the rest of you guys think, like, what the hell's going on here? Are we kids in the hall? Like, did that cause some issues?
Well, no, because for my part, no, because the show was over. But I did worry logistically about how are we going to be able to do the movie.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
But your show was over at that point. Right.
It's funny. The show got canceled right before we signed to do a movie. And we only got signed to do a movie because Uncle Lauren had a deal with Paramount. And he had just done Wayne's World.
Mm.
I would love to be that meeting because he signs a 5-picture movie. And then they go, so what's your next movie, Lauren? We're really excited. Well, there's Kids in the Hall. Sorry, who? Children? Lost Children? You're doing... That's our 5-picture contract!
Oh, that's great. Yeah. So after the movie was done, then the kids are basically done.
We thought we were done.
Right.
So 4 years, we did our separate adventures. Dave and I got back together right away. We
prepared the friendship.
We prepared the friendship. He found out that I was in Hollywood, that I just I hadn't moved yet, but I was at a hotel auditioning. I'd gone to a hotel, and for that summer I was auditioning stuff. And he doesn't know this, but our makeup call, I was naked in the bath. Which sort of makes sense.
So Dave Foley, if you're listening, with Sid Caesar and whoever else we were talking
about. Neil Simon, naked in the bath.
There you go.
And Duff.
So let me ask you, so this happened to me too, like, and that's actually where the premise of But I'm Chris Jericho started, was I made my name in one field or from one thing. Then tried to get into acting or study the acting. And like, you know, you'd go sit in a room with 40 other people that look exactly like me to deliver one line. You know, these pretzels are making me thirsty for CSI Sheboygan or whatever. And you're like, nobody gives a shit. Like, but I'm Chris Jericho. Like, I have a life. Like, was it like that for you when the kids break up and you mentioned you had to go audition?
Yeah.
You know?
It was weird. Yeah, because from 96 to 2000, we were having separate adventures. And mine was auditioning. And it feels like forever where I got my first part, but it was actually only like two or three months. But mm-hmm. I was auditioning a lot, so it felt. And one person called my agent and told me that he should take acting lessons.
Oh.
And I was crushed. But this is what I think. This is what got me through it.
Mm.
No, I can act. I'm just bad at auditions.
I'm terrible at auditions. Yeah, I hate auditioning.
And whether I'm lying to myself or whether we're lying to ourselves.
Yeah. Auditions are stupid.
It helped me survive. In fact, they told me that morning when I was on the way to an audition. And I was auditioning for the TV show of a very famous woman, Nora Ephron, mm-hmm. the writer and director of Sleepless in Seattle. Yeah. And I came in and I broke down in front of her. But you told me I have to take acting lessons. And I can't read this part. I'm not good enough. And then she mothered me.
Like, okay, crazy man.
Crazy man. And she like talked me through the part. And she said, "Yeah, it's not great. But you're really upset right now. Why don't you come back next week?" And it would have been a good story if I got the part. I didn't, but I was much better next week. But I took acting lessons. And the next part after that I auditioned for, I got my first part. It was for a TV show that was canceled right away. Don't go blank, Evan. I'm aging, so I forget people's names. A really great stand-up comic. It was his first TV show. And he died a few years ago.
Oh, wow.
And I forget his name. Greg?
Oh, Greg. Giraldi?
Yes! That's it.
For 500. I get it. Thanks, Alex.
That's it. And it was so fun working with him. He was such a great guy, and he was so funny. Mm-hmm. But I only had a week. I was only like a guest part, but that was the beginning of me getting parts.
What other stuff did you do?
Within a year, I was like getting good parts. Like, I played Guru Saj in an episode of Friends.
That's right. What was the part on that?
It was a guy, David Schwimmer's character. What's his name? I don't even
Ross.
Remember. Thank you, Ross. Yeah. He had a boil on his ass, and the doctors couldn't get it off. So I was like a spiritual East guy, and what we do is we love the boil. And then but I can't get it off until I accidentally, it gets caught in my watch.
Did you do something on Seinfeld, too?
Yes, I was the same year, like, right after that. Then I got the part of Denim Vest in Seinfeld.
What was Denim Vest?
Denim Vest. I wear, a blue jean jacket, a blue jean shirt, and blue jean pants. And I'm hitting on...
You know, that's called a Canadian tuxedo.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I didn't know that was bad until I got that part. Yeah.
And you're hitting on Elaine?
Elaine. See, I forgot her name, too. I'm hitting on Elaine, and she's like, oh, look who's staring at me, denim vest. And then, like,
was that a fun set to be on?
That was fun. It was Jerry Seinfeld was totally in charge at that point. Larry David had gone a couple years earlier. It was their last season, and he was totally in charge. He told the director what to do. He told the writers what to do. He told the cast what to do, like even the regulars, but like in a good way. Mm-hmm. Like he was all positive. Like he wasn't mean or anything, but he was totally in charge. And it's funny because you rehearse all day and you shoot all day, and then he stayed with the writers all night. Like it was
to rewrite or
yeah, because every show rewrites. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Was there a lot of people at that time, like Kids in the Hall, like obviously as popular as you were, and also doing this entirely new, almost new brand of comedy? Was there a lot of those type of like Hollywood guys that were big fans of Kids in the Hall?
Yeah, that was just the beginning of it, though. It happened more in the 2000s, what it was would be the writers. The writers who became producers, they were at auditions right before I auditioned in front of them. They would say, "We love the Kids in the Hall." And mm-hmm. That was nice. But it was between 96 and 2000 when I was doing all these TV parts and movie parts that our show was on Comedy Central. And that's when we became big. And all of a sudden there was a demand for us. So then we did our comeback tour in 2000. And we've done a lot of tours since, but that was like the biggest one. Right? Yeah.
Because you guys do, like you said, you still do live shows and tour around, do
sketches too.
Do you do like some of your classic sketches? We do all new stuff.
The first couple of tours, we only wrote a couple of new sketches and we did best of. Then we got bored. In 2007 tour, it was all new. And then and we were really excited about that. It was good stuff too. And then we the tour last 2 years ago that we did, we wanted to please everybody. We're getting like nice in our old age, so we did half classics and half new stuff.
Which is, I mean, that's kind of, it's like once again relating it to rock and roll. You play, you know, your new songs, but people want to see the hits.
Yeah, I know exactly. Yeah.
So what are some of the biggest hits that you have as Kids in the Hall?
From the TV show. Mm-hmm. Well, the two that I said, Mark McKinney, the
Those
hit
are
crusher.
Both his.
Yeah, they're both his.
Does he have an ego in the band because of it?
He doesn't really. He also knows they both came because of me.
Why?
The Chicken Ladies knows the Head Crusher sketch. The Head Crusher sketch. First of all, you have to go back a few years, 85, when we're struggling comics in Toronto. 84, before that, we weren't discovered by Lorne Michaels. And Mark and I were performing that night at Theater Sports, and we were on a double date. With two women, we went to a restaurant called Franz. Great, famous for rice pudding, but it was so famous you couldn't order it because it was always sold out.
Really, I love rice pudding.
I know. Well, don't go to Franz; it's too good. It's too good to eat. So we were there on a double date with the women, and the women were hating us. It was obvious they were hating us. We were being funny, we thought, and then they would sigh and take another bite of their food, and then out of the blue, Mark had never done this before, but he was super inspired. He went to both the women, "I'm crushing your head. I'm crushing your head." And I laughed, and the women left.
Not a good pickup line.
Yes.
This fucking guy said he was going to crush my head.
Yeah. And then cut to 3 years later, Lorne Michaels finally has us signed to do a pilot for HBO and CBC. He brings us to New York for 6 months. He puts us in it's actually a big closet. It was like an office, but it was like the closet at his building that he owned. And oh yeah, we shared the office with two guys from the IRS who were auditing Lorne Michaels. And it's really cute. We'd be writing jokes, and you can hear the two guys by their counting machines laughing.
Laughing about how much money they're going to stick Lauren Michaels with.
Yeah, Lauren Michaels with, yeah. And Lauren was really nice. Oh, these are the two guys auditing me, Chris and Peter. Chris and Peter, this is the Kids in the Hall. Like, it was really nice. But he, we were writing stuff. We were writing some of our best scenes from the stage show into the pilot, but Lauren encouraged us to think of a few new things that were filmic. And then I said to Mark, I said, remember that time 3 or 4 years ago we were on the double date? And you said, I'm crushing your head, I'm crushing your head. And he remembered, and he said, yeah, no one would like that. And then I said, this is the classic thing, I said, Mark, if you do this on TV, college kids will be doing it all over the country.
Wow.
And that's how...
The prophet.
Yes.
Nostradamus McDonald.
Yes, but he created it. I just reminded him of
it. But you never know what's going to be popular. You know what I mean? Like, with your time, like, you know, like in wrestling with catchphrases and different things. Like, I got this thing right now with the list, and I put you on my list. It became the biggest thing I've ever done.
Oh, wow.
Selling lists now. It's a stupid clipboard. But you just made the list, and people went nuts for it. You never know.
Right.
Like, you think that that's not even funny, but didn't matter. People liked it. And the crushing head thing, it's like I'm doing it right now. You close one eye, and I'm crushing
Kevin crushing my head. Yeah. It hurts a little.
But people loved it.
Yes. That's the one time in my life I had a feeling. I really did. I really had a feeling. Like, I got our audience. I got that we were like not as good as Monty Python kind of thing. Mm. And it was weird things like Silly Walks and...
Minister of Silly Walks.
Yeah. John Cleese walking.
The Lumberjack, you know, like just stuff that people could relate to.
And it seemed like that it was exactly like that. Something you could relate to, but that was also silly and nobody else would have thought of. And it seemed like something...
that would work.
But I've never been right before or after.
Since. What about the Chicken Lady?
Chicken Lady, I wrote a scene called Freak, where I'm a guy at a fair. I'm a nosebleeder, but I've been to a self-help group. So there's kids going, come on, we paid our 10 cents to bleed. No, I don't have to bleed for you. I know what I'm worth, and I don't feel like nosebleeding today. And it's a scene I like, but nobody really remembers it. But I wrote it, and I brought it to the read-through originally. Well, I say, the nosebleeder says, go to the Chicken Lady. She'll drop her she'll lay her eggs at the drop of a hat. She's an emotional dependent. But I didn't have her in it. And then when I read it, everybody liked it. And Bruce McCullough's note was, you know, we should see the Chicken Lady. The scene should end with her laying eggs. Come on, kids. Watch me lay eggs. Don't go away. And so I rewrote it. I thought that was a good idea. And who do I cast? Mark's a little light in this show. Okay, so I could cut to the Chicken Lady, Mark a player. And so then Mark... he was late in the show, so all week when we were at the studio, like blocking and rehearsing and stuff, he stayed in his Chicken Lady costume and his Chicken Lady character. And there was a choreographer for another scene, and he got her to teach her to walk him like a chicken. The Chicken Lady doesn't even walk in my scene. Mm-hmm. And so he got into this character, and he came up with that Chicken Lady was horny. And one night he wrote the sketch, and even though we had already picked the scenes and everything, we had sets for everything. It was so good that we said, oh, we got to put it in right now. So we borrowed another set, and the Chicken Lady was – that's how the Chicken
so
Lady
disgusting.
Was
born. It's so disgusting. Like, it's such gross. Like you said, laying the eggs, but she wants to
– Well, the classic thing is that, the best part of that, the first sketch – and we did like 8 or 9. The best part of that – and they were all good. The best part of that sketch was Chicken Lady's on a blind date with Dave, and it's not going well. So Chicken Lady feeds him some eggs. And Dave eats the eggs. Oh, they're actually pretty good. And Chicken Lady, they're straight out of my body and onto your plate.
I remember that.
I remember the studio audience like being horrified.
What were some of your like regular characters? right from my body onto your plate. I remember that.
Onto your plate. Like, it says it so cheerfully. And then Dave screams and leaves. my favorite one was The King of Empty Promises. Mm-hmm. I only did it twice, where I promise to do things for people and then I don't. So people go, oh, did you tape the Simon and Garfunkel album? First it starts with, look, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll tape that Simon and Garfunkel album for you. You'll do that? Will do. And then the next day, do you have it? Slip my mind. And that was a bit of a catchphrase thing for a second.
I remember we'll do.
We'll do something. And that's sort of based on what I'm like as a person.
Oh, you showed up here.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, I'm getting better. Well, I show up to things.
Yeah.
If I said I told you I'd bring you a book, I probably would have. Probably would have slipped my mind.
Slipped my mind.
Yeah, bring you that book.
So that was a good one.
That was a good one. And also the Dave and I, Simon and Hecubus. where we're two people who are bad at being evil. Sort of like a subconsciously stolen from Count Floyd from SCTV.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But where I guess my catchphrase was a word where, evil! And then... And then, yeah, Hecubus comes up from the ground and he's the spawn of Satan. That's
yeah. But not good at being evil.
Yeah, that was fun to do.
Who are your, some of your favorite SCTV characters?
Oh, it's funny because I saw it as a kid with my mom. The first thing we loved was John Candy as Johnny LaRue.
Great.
Because the first thing he had like a workout show, but he was like overweight and he was smoking
with his jacket that said JL.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he couldn't do a push up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I loved all the Eugene Levy characters. I love the two news guys, Earl Cannonbear and
Floyd
the other
Robertson.
Floyd Robertson, that's it.
Earl Cannonbear.
Earl Cannonbear.
He was also great too in the Sammy Maudlin show.
Oh yeah, yeah. He was Bobby Bittman.
Bobby Bittman.
How are ya?
How are ya?
I saw him do it live a few weeks ago in Toronto at SCTV Benefit. It was amazing.
Really?
To see
did
him.
It?
Yeah, he did.
It was great too because Bobby Bittman.
Yeah.
He's a Bittman, you know? But that was a great character.
Yeah. Eugene Levy's sort of my favorite.
Did you ever have that would have been kind of a cool like SCTV versus Kids in the Hall?
It's funny because Dave and Scott and I did a benefit with them. But yeah, like I said, performance wise, they would always like wipe the floor with us. Mm-hmm. Even now, mm-hmm. Eugene Levy's 70 and he was like amazing.
Dude, he's so funny. Do you ever seen Schitt's Creek?
It's funny. Bruce McCulloch just directed some. Yeah, it's great. And
with Kim and Catherine O'Hara have such great.
I know. And Catherine O'Hara sort of my favorite too. Like, they're like both my favorite.
So great, yeah.
Everyone's my favorite.
But just think, it's like that era that it's every single one of those people on that show went on to
become
a big star. Everyone.
I know.
I mean, you had a couple, like maybe like a Tony Rosato or a Robin Duke, but even they ended up on SNL.
And Robin Duke's amazing. She was on the show. Like live, she's like amazing.
Really? Yeah.
She
did
a sketch that Catherine O'Hara sort of was a straight man for. And like no one could be Robin Duke live.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. It didn't maybe translate to TV at that particular time during Saturday Night Live and stuff. Like it's just like bad timing. But she's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
She's brilliant.
So when you watch comedians today, and like, is there any sketch shows on now?
I mean, well, I love Key and Peele.
Yeah, they're good. Yeah,
I mean, like it's off now, but I love Key and Peele.
Two guys, but still, it's
yeah,
stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but just for sketch shows, I liked Inside Amy Schumer. It was like the good scenes are great.
Yeah.
The Kroll show I haven't seen yet. Nick Kroll's show. I guess they don't do it anymore.
I haven't seen it. Yeah, yeah.
But I hear it's great, and I just haven't seen it because I'm a busy guy in Winnipeg with my fake sunglasses.
And do you still do a lot of like auditioning and stuff? That's funny because you came here today because originally you might not have been able to.
Yes,
but you blew the audition on purpose, which I appreciate.
Yeah, well, I'm kidding, but it wasn't an audition. It's just what they did. It was for a sitcom, Man with a Plan,
mm-hmm.
Man LeBlanc show. They asked my availability, so I never had to audition. But when they just ask your availability, that means you're their plan B.
Yeah.
But they're trying to get plan A.
Yeah.
And I guess they got plan A.
Yeah, they got plan A. I hate that shit, man.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than when like if you do an audition and you're like, oh, I just totally nailed it, and you don't get a call back. Or they ask your availability and they don't call you back. You know, it's like show business stuff, man.
And the opposite is weird. 10 years ago, I auditioned for a Disney show, like an over-the-top Disney show, and I thought, oh, I was horrible, but I got it.
Mm.
But it was hard. I'm known as – the kids in the hall always make fun of me that I'm the most over-the-top kid in the hall, that I make the big faces. But they would have been proud of me because no matter how big I went during the week of the rehearsal in the Disney show – I couldn't satisfy the guy. He kept saying, Kevin, you've got to do it bigger.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like I was bleeding from the gums. I couldn't, I'm doing it like this! Hey, kids! Come! Bigger?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm going to have a stroke.
They want that though. Like I did a couple Disney shows and Nickelodeon shows, and they want you to be that can't be seen chewing.
I thought I
chewing.
Could do it.
Yeah,
I thought
yeah,
I could.
Yeah.
Well, I'm on a Disney show now. It's called Walk the Prank, about to start the third season.
Walk the Prank. Okay.
Walk the Prank. Oh, the Trevor Moore is the guy who created it. He's the showrunner. And he's from the sketch troupe 10 years ago, The Whitest Kids You Know, which is a really good sketch
show.
That's
another one, yeah.
And because he's cool, it's like a Disney show. It's got the typical Disney show stuff, but he's sneaking in good, like cool stuff. Like, for example, when we're filming a scene, I play the math teacher, and I had a scene with some of the kids. And between takes, he came to me and he said, when that little girl says that to you, go to a very dark place. And I did. I thought, oh, it's too dark. He said, no, that was perfect. Because of me, my character, I'm thinking suicide. the kid's right. The words are like a Disney thing, but yeah. You got stuff like Trevor Moore going, go to a very dark place.
For the Disney show.
Yeah.
And Kids in the Hall still doing shows and still.
Yeah, and the Lorne and lots of people want us to do, we're trying to set up a conference call for next week to do a thing like Mr. Show did a few years ago. They did 6 new episodes on Netflix, and we have so much new material. We'd write more new material, of course, but we have so much new material from all the last tours. It'd be very easy.
Yeah, because you haven't done anything on TV.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's all live stuff.
We did do something in 2010. We did a miniseries called Death Comes to Town.
Right.
We tore that. That was CBC and IFC.
But what was that like more of like a storyline thing?
Yeah, it was a story.
Sketch, right?
Because the idea was originally thought of as a movie, and then we just came up with so many ideas that it became a miniseries. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So we get together. The plan was, Chris... to be like Monty Python, to have a TV show for 5 years, which we did, like them, to do a movie, which we did, and have the movie so wildly successful, we would do a movie every 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. So the plan stalled when the movie was a bomb. Though we do love the movie; I do think it's a good movie.
It was a bomb.
It was a bomb. Our nickname for it is cost $8 million, gross $3 million. That's our nickname. So that's all things, but we still do a version of that. We get together every 3 or 4 years and either do a tour or a miniseries. So we still have that blueprint. So we're still together.
How is that when I talked to Rainn Wilson about this when he did his big movie called The Rocker?
Oh, right.
But he's like, you know, it was once again, it was a bomb.
Yeah.
And even MacGruber, when I did it, was a bomb.
I gotta see MacGruber. I know I'd love it.
It's really fun. It's real campy slapstick, but it's fun.
I know I love it.
It's another one that's become a cult classic end. Yeah, yeah. But when it first came out, I think the budget was $6 million or whatever, the same thing. And you read the first weekend, $1.3 million, like in one theater. No, that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh man, it wasn't even my movie. But how was it? Were you guys following? Like,
oh yeah. Well, we had a big time agent, Michael Gruber. He was a big time agent in Willie Morris. And so he's the first week, because it wasn't released at many theaters. We were in the game. It was it wasn't released in many theaters, and we had finished number 10 in the top 10 for a very small amount of theaters. So we were in the game, and we thought, well, now the word of mouth is going to pick up. And then the next week, we weren't in the top 100. Anybody who wanted to see our movie saw it the first weekend.
Yeah, yeah. I was there. I saw it in the theater.
Thank you very much.
I remember walking up being very confused. Maybe I have to
see it again.
This happens like when you're a kid. I was a kid. What was it, 96? So I was 25. And you're thinking like you're expecting A and you get B.
Right.
So I think that throws you off quite a bit.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
The hardcore kid fans are disappointed, but I swear if you see it now...
I got to go watch it again with different eyes.
It's a good movie. Sometimes, and God bless us, we sacrifice jokes to add to the story. Mm-hmm. Which in the old days, Dave and I would have fought against that, but I was like confused. But there's a lot of funny stuff in it, and it is a pretty good story. We can never really figure out the ending, but... So that's why it's ambiguous. Chris Cooper could be under – like that's the character I play, the scientist. Yeah. He could be underground. He could be working to fix his drug.
Right, right. Because
we were like 70s fans, so we wanted it to be ambiguous.
But... Well, sure. But once again, it's something – it's very kids to do that. You do your own
–
if people expect something, you always kind of change – flip the script on them. You know what I mean?
But I'm very proud of it. It has Cancer Boy in it, and that was later stolen from the movie Thank You for Smoking. They put like a character named Cancer Boy in it.
What does Cancer Boy do?
Bruce McKellen plays Cancer Boy, and he's on the drug to make him happy. And I go, oh, is the drug working? Do you feel better? He goes, no, there's no hope for me. And he says, each day's a gift. And he keeps like wheeling his wheelchair in a circle. You got to see the movie again.
I will. I'm going to watch it.
It's a good movie.
I'm laughing because another of my favorite kids' sketches. A lot of my favorite kids' sketches don't have you in it.
Yeah, I hear that a lot.
You might have been in the one where Bruce loses his pen.
My pen. I was in that.
My pen.
It's even worse. The two that you said I wasn't in, I have been in. I've been in one of those sketches. So that's
not
that's
the
even
main
worse.
Focus, right? Yeah.
I'm the guy whose pen I take his pen.
So you're the guy who's driving away with his pen.
Yeah, yeah. I'm driving away with his pen, and I hardly notice him. Yeah, yeah.
My pen.
Yeah, and that's Bruce's curse of his life for the past 25 years.
Oh, gosh.
People like see him and go, my pen.
But see, that's how it is. Once again, did I make the list? Am I on the list? Am I on the list? I'm like, and that's just been a year. Like, I'm going to have to deal with this for the rest of my life.
Wow. You're
on the list? I'm on the list? But that's, it's good to know that you created something that people enjoy and revere.
That's amazing.
Yeah. What's your favorite kids sketch ever?
Well, when people ask me that, I always say it this way, because it would be different every day. But the Kids in the Hall sketch that defines the Kids in the Hall the best, and it has all five of us in it. It sort of gets the spirit of it. It's a great idea. Bruce McCullough thought of it, then we all wrote it through improv. It's in the pilot. It's called Reg, and it's where the five of us are. It's very Canadian. We're like sitting out in the woods. We're having beer, and we're sad that our friend Reg died. Which is very Canadian. When you're 19 or 20, you always have one friend who died. I don't know why. Canadian Midwest.
Oh, yeah.
That is true, Kevin.
Yeah, it is. Well, thanks, Canada.
Tom Parker died. Tom Parker was my guy who died. Oh,
okay.
and then we're really sad, and we're talking about Reg, and we're going through like things about, man, he had perfect hair. He had perfect, he could skate. Oh, he was a great skater. And then we start, well, it goes into it. You know, one day you're like, you and your friends, Reg, you're going to college. You got to pick a course that you're going to like, maybe that'll be your job and that'll be your career. And then you graduate college and you get that job and you marry a woman and you're stuck with that job no matter whether you like it or not because you have wife and kids now. Yeah, and then one day you're sneaking behind Reg with piano wire, good strong piano wire. And it turns out we killed him. But to me, it defines the truth because we killed him, but there's a disconnect. We're also sad that he's dead.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Without realizing that it was our fault.
Yeah,
and at the end when we go, to good friends, good times, to ritualistic murders, to Reg.
And totally straight deadpan,
yeah, totally
too, right?
Yeah, totally
the dark deadpan. Comedy of
totally straight deadpan, yes.
Dude, yeah.
And I would say that's the trip that least best defines us, and in many ways is the best sketch.
Last thing, I just wanted to just bring it up quickly because you mentioned it. So in doing But I'm Chris Jericho, meet a lot of great guys in Toronto. And so my cousin Lee is I don't really know what he does. He's like an improv comic, and he teaches improv overseas. And that's, you know, I know a little bit. But then apparently he's like
– he's a comedy genius. He's brilliant. I do think that I'm one of my talents is that I know talented people.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I see a stand-up comic and I see, oh, he has great jokes, but he doesn't – to me, you have to be a natural comic. You have to not just tell great jokes. You have to have that comic timing.
Is there a vibe or timing?
Yeah, a vibe, right? And a vibe. There's something that if you like taped his or her mouth shut, they could still be funny.
Mm.
And I've seen a lot of improv in the past few years because I go to improv theaters to teach as well, how to write sketches. And I can honestly say that Lee, your cousin, is one of the best improvisers and that I've ever seen and a comedy genius. He's a totally I told somebody that and they told him, and he said he freaked out when he heard that.
Yeah, yeah, I'm going to tell him too. Because like I said, he never said a word. I had no idea just how good he was because Mike Fly, who directed But I'm Chris Jericho, told me, like, dude, he is the man.
He's
a legendary guy on the scene.
He's legendary. And his partner, Steve, is also amazing. And they're the best comedy – they're the best improv team I think I've ever seen. And, because the Kids in the Hall – We used improv to be funny in it.
Mm-hmm.
Later, I think I got a little better at it. But back in the day, only Mark and Dave were technically good improvisers. We just used it to be funny. Lee and Steve, Crumbs, they do both. They're technically good at improv, and they can be really funny. And they do a third thing. They tell like a good story during the improv. And Lee's absolutely a comedy genius.
We should get him Here's what we should do. We should get him a tryout on SNL. Could you get... Can you hook that up, McDonald? You know him long.
Well, I wonder. At the very least, I could. I could try.
I mean, you know, that's
also writing too. Like he could probably.
That's what I mean. Like I think you know he likes doing the overseas thing, but that could be kind of cool. Let's see what we can do.
Yeah, yeah. You and I will call Lord.
Yeah, we will. We'll call him, Kevin.
Thank you.
Great talking to you,
man.
We're
about to shake hands. Shake hands.
Hey!
He's very strong. No, he went soft. And thank you very much.
Ow, my hand.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, I made you an omelet on account of I figured you might not like bugs.
Oh, thank you.
Come in. Tuck in.
Ah, good.
Of course it's good. Because they're fresh, straight out of my body and onto your plate.
Thanks to Kevin McDonald out there performing and teaching improv classes. If you want to learn more from one of the best in the biz, then keep an eye on Kevin's Twitter. He's at Kevin the Kith. Kevin the Kith, K-I-T-H, which is Kids in the Hall. So he's going to be in Portland, Oregon this weekend, performing and teaching at the Brody Theater on December 9th and 10th. Go check him out. And even more importantly, it looks like Kevin and the rest of the Kids in the Hall cast are reteaming with SNL producer Lorne Michaels to bring the Kids in the Hall back to TV. They're talking about a limited series run on Netflix as soon as next year. And remember, two out of the five kids have been in But I'm Chris Jericho, including Kevin McDonald playing McGloin on season two of But I'm Chris Jericho, premiering tomorrow at butimchrisjericho.com, butimchrisjericho.com. Go check it out. The more you watch, the more chance we have of doing more. If you saw season one in 2013, you know how funny it was. So it took us 8 years to sign the show, 4 years to get a second season. So maybe in a year we'll do the third season. That's what we're hoping for. Go check it out, butimchrisjericho.com. And also check out the Team Tiger Awesome Show with their take on the news.
This is the news with Team Tiger Awesome. As week two of Factory Watch 2017 begins, I am still being held hostage. Though talks with representatives of the now closed and hopefully quite soon to be reopened Cheesecake Factory at the mall have not been fruitful, there are signs of hope. Factory management initially cited the nearly derelict mall as a terrible location that could not support a business with such robust offerings as the Cheesecake Factory. To respond, my captors have given me the following message to read on the air. Of the many and varied offerings for which the Cheesecake Factory became famous, we are willing to concede both the Thai cuisine portion of the menu and the seafood portion, but not the Baja fish tacos, because those count as Mexican food. Are you kidding me? That's what... Oh. Well, no, I've never been to the Cheesecake Factory. But how can you expect a restaurant to have stuff on hand to make all of that different shit at any given moment? No, it just seems wasteful. No wonder they went out of business. Okay. No, it's cool. I'm sorry. No, I said I'm sorry!
This has been Factory Watch 2017. For more... listen to the Team Tiger Awesome Show every Sunday on the Jericho Network, right here on Podcast One.
Laugh along with Team Tiger Awesome every Sunday morning. They're going to be coming up pretty soon here with another Star Wars themed podcast, probably in a week or two. I'm going to be tracking that this week. But subscribe to Apple Podcasts and be sure to leave them a 5-star rating and review, and do that for all the great shows on the Jericho Network. And also get your cabin booked for the Chris Jericho Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. They're going fast. Some decks are completely sold out. And if you want to be one of the first 400 cabins that gets to be involved in the exclusive Chris Jericho question and answer session, go reserve your cabin now, as in now. There's literally a handful of cabins left, and that's not some kind of exaggeration. That is the real deal. Come be a part of it. And it, on top of that, if you sign up before January 15th, you'll get a picture of me with the list and you with the list. You can put your name on the list. I'll put your name on the list. You got to do that, though, before January 15th. Go book your cabin now. ChrisJerichoCruise.com. We set sail October 27th, 2018, and here's the rest of the cruise lineup. I'm your host with the most, Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler, emceeing the whole damn shindig. Mick Foley, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Rey Mysterio, Killing the Town featuring Cyrus will be there, Keeping It 100, Conan, Disco Inferno, and Shane Helms, Raven will be there, Beyond the Darkness, Dave and Tim telling some scary stories, Ron Funch is doing comedy, Jim Brewer doing comedy, Brad Williams doing comedy, Busted Open will be joining the festivities, Busted Open Radio. On the rock and roll side, it's Fozzie, Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons, King, The Dives, featuring Evan Stanley, the Dave Spivak Project. Speewee will be here. His new video for Get Out of My House is about ready to be dropped fairly soon. The Darlings of Rock and Rolls, Cherry Bombs, will be there. The greatest AC/DC tribute band, female, ever, Shoot the Thrill. The greatest Ozzy Osbourne tribute, Blizzard of Ozzy, will be there. So many others, of course. Ring of Honor will be hosting the Sea of Honor tournament on the ship. The winner will get a future shot at the Ring of Honor World Championship. In the middle of the ocean, we're going to have this tournament with the Young Bucks, the villain Marty Scurll, the American Nightmare Cody, don't call him Rhodes, Brandy Rhodes will be there, Briscoe Brothers, the Party Peacock, Dalton Castle. Book your cabin now at ChrisJerichoCruise.com, and don't be left behind. And speaking of big talent, big matches, don't forget Alpha versus Omega, January 4th at the Tokyo Dome, Chris Jericho versus Kenny Omega. Subscribe to New Japan World if you want to see that live, and if you want to go to the Tokyo Dome, you can do that too, but tickets are selling fast for that show as well, and also selling fast, you can be a part of of the Alpha Club Jericho and show your colors by picking up a new long sleeve or t-shirt. Represent.com/Alpha Club. Represent.com/Alpha Club. Be a part of Alpha Club Jericho. All proceeds from these tees are going to help fight childhood type 1 diabetes. And don't forget Fozzy on tour in Europe with Steel Panther starting January 28th. And the Judas Rising tour continues in the United States starting February 28th with Through Fire, Dark Sky Choir, and Santa Cruz. We're going all across the United States. I think it's about 40 dates total, all the way from Clifton Park, New York, down to San Diego, California, and everywhere in between. That's all. Enough of my yakking. Thank you so much for supporting this show. Keep on supporting this show and the sponsors, including DDP Yoga. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Take advantage of Dallas's biggest holiday sale ever. 30% off DDP Yoga, the app at All Match, and to True Car. You can save money on buying a new or used car. Thank you for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And coming up this Friday, big news in wrestling all across the board that there are new executives for Impact Wrestling taking over the entire company, taking over the entire creative. It's Scott D'Amore and my old friend and Killing the Town co-host, Don Callis. They're taking over Impact Wrestling. They're going to make an impact, and they're going to tell us all about it this Friday with the exclusive interview with the brand new senior executives. They're the executive vice presidents of Impact Wrestling. Callis, D'Amore will be here Friday. We'll get the straight scoop of what happened, what was behind it, and where they're going to take that company in the future. In the meantime, and in between time, that's it. Stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. Crush your head. Crush your head. Crush your head.
Listen to new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday on the Podcast One app or subscribe at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.
Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
5 seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay. Judges? That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo!
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Yamaha portable keyboard, only $79. Add a month of lessons for only $99. Plus the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing and gift cards, the perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center. Lessons available at select locations only.